Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
Good morning. We're sponsored by Anderson Mechanical Corporation. This June 3rd, 70 degrees right now, heading into the 80s. A weekend of deadly violence in Philadelphia has left at least two people dead, multiple others injured, and a man was killed. Within the last 24 hours, a man killed after a quadruple shooting broke out. This is in the Cobbs Creek neighborhood in Philadelphia. 23-year-old man shot multiple times, pronounced dead at the hospital. That second victim, a 20-year-old man, is in stable condition right now after he was shot in the leg. So the first incident, this all started on Friday after 11:30 in the evening. So Friday into Saturday morning, South 58th Street. In that incident, officers say a 29-year-old man was shot several times. He was taken to the hospital. He's in stable condition this morning, so he survived that one. No arrests in that case. And the next one happened just after 9:30 p.m. Saturday night, late Saturday night, and that was the 1000 block of West Hunting Park Avenue. So in all of these late at night involving young men, no mention of whether or not this was gang-related, gun-related, drug-related. Well, obviously it was gun-related, but drug-related, and we don't hear about motives in each of these. We don't have any arrests. We don't have any suspects.
Do they ever actually release that information either upon the crime breaking out and suspects being apprehended, or even once these cases play out? Do we ever find out what these are publicly, or is this all meant to protect the identity of these suspects?
Yeah, it's, I think, twofold. To protect, first of all, it's all about the gun violence. And so therefore, if you start mentioning gangs or drugs, now you're diluting the message of it's the guns.
No, that's true.
And, and then the other piece of it that I see is just the image of Philadelphia, worrying about our image as a beautiful city, right? We're a world-class beautiful city. There's a fear, I think, that if we start talking about a gang problem, which we know there's a gang issue here, mm-hmm. right? And that involves drugs and it involves guns and all of that. It's the imagery, the marketing, the brand, as Greg Stocker would say.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's how I see it. Yep. And that's not just this administration. This goes back. I mean, I could take you back through every administration.
Yeah, it's decades, just
gotten,
right?
Just gotten worse.
Yep. Okay.
A Philadelphia police officer riding a dirt bike was injured. This happened yesterday after he was struck by a car. Happened 4:30 in the afternoon, East Cayuga and Bennington streets. So they say the officer was working in ATV detail, so this was not his recreational day off or anything of that nature. He was on duty working in ATV detail when a woman driving a black Honda CRV made a U-turn in the street and struck the officer. So then the officer reportedly slid into another parked vehicle after the collision, and he was injured, not life-threatening injuries. That's what we're being told, thank goodness. I don't have word of his condition, but no other injuries reported on that one. So it's still under investigation. The ATV was totaled. The Honda really had minor damages. And that just shows you car v. ATV. You as the ATV rider, whether you're doing this recreationally or you're an off-duty police officer, you're the one who suffers the injuries.
Indeed.
We do have an annual event. This is in South Jersey, disrupted by the Utes. The unruly teenagers, multiple fights breaking out over the weekend, and this led to nearly a dozen arrests. So I know a week ago we had talked a lot about the Utes, the young people, the teens and underage kids at the Jersey Shore. In this case, it's Gloucester Township, New Jersey, at this annual Gloucester Township Day in Veterans Park. So a lot of juveniles, a lot of kids who were being dropped off. And so they started congregating. You had one group at one point over the weekend, 500 young people who had been congregating, and that's when they became reckless. That's when they became violent, and these fights broke out. So we did have multiple arrests, and I don't know if they're going to be cited for disorderly conduct. Sometimes they're just taken into custody and then released. So we'll follow that one for you. And yes, I'll just headline what you had said. We had some moments of anti-Israeli protesters clashing with Pride Parade goers, for one thing, social media erupted. Queers for Palestine had a change of heart. So I don't know if all the anti-Israel protesters were there as part of gay pride or LGBTQ plus pride. I don't have that information for you. We just know that one group was identifying themselves as anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian, and then the other side was obviously there to kick off LGBTQ plus Pride Month here in Philadelphia.
Anthony and Phil, do we have the video footage that went viral on social media? If we could play it, if we have that ready, can we play that right now? Nobody's listening to the show right now, I guess. Anybody here?
Is he listening?
Does anybody want to answer?
In one of the videos, and this, unfortunately for Philadelphia, we think about the brand and the image of Philadelphia. This went viral. In fact, some international sites picked it up. A wave of pride marchers, you know, wearing the colorful outfits, and they were hitting drums. And they stopped the parade. Actually, they were stopped by this self-identifying pro-Palestinian group. So some of the pro-Palestinian members do identify as LGBTQ plus. Nikhil, I don't know. Sean Farish, I don't know if they were all identifying, in certain ways. So I don't have that full information.
Isn't this?
We just know it was disruptive.
Yeah. And Sean, you mentioned this a couple of minutes ago. This is where the left devours the left. The woke goes after the woke. And it's, you know, when you keep going after those with common sense, anybody right of center, eventually there's nobody left to clash with and devour because everybody's been canceled. So now it's like you're like eating your own in a way. And we've talked about this so many times in the past. Like, if you are one of these members of the LGBTQ plus community and you have stood with Palestine since October 7th, and I know I've said it probably 38 times on this show, the moment you step foot in the Middle East, they'll throw you off a building. They'll cut your head off. Trust me, you're not doing the righteous, just cause here.
Yeah, you're going on a short flight off a tall building if you go to Gaza.
Yeah.
One of those rainbow flags. And I'm not saying that to be mean. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that because that's what happens. Like, that's literally what goes on. I had someone tell me, well, you know, Iran purposefully didn't do damage in Israel because they have humanity. I said, oh, humanity. I said, really, throwing rocks at women in the street because the hijab was on too low. That's humane. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Fine. I guess you could call that whatever you'd like. You know, it's a cannibalism thing, right? The left is eventually going to eat itself. It's like, just ask Chris Christie what happens when he eats all the food at the all-you-can-eat buffet. He starts eating the people. He starts eating the plates. He starts eating the chairs, right? This is like Pac-Man.
He's sloppy Chris Christie.
That's right. Sloppy guy. Don't call him a fat pig. It's not a nice thing to say. You look at, this is what the left does. There's nobody left to eat except themselves. So they start eating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Philly, city of brotherly love. You know, the proof is in the pudding there and in so many other cities, not just Philadelphia.
Yep. All said.
Yeah.
So true. Well, I don't know if Anthony ever did have that video, but we'll move on. Do you have it?
It's playing. Sorry, my mic wasn't working.
Okay, it was. All right. His mic wasn't working.
Lorenzo's on a delay today, folks. Bear with him. His internet's slow.
It's a Philly thing.
It's a Philly thing.
Well, I'll just headline, since it is technically local in Delaware, we will have jury selection underway. Yes, it's a jury trial for Hunter Biden facing 3 felony gun charges in this trial. So everything kicks off today. Carries a maximum sentence of 25 years in prison if convicted. I know we'll talk about it, but I just want to headline it. And then for our Phillies, we dropped last night's series finale to the Cardinals. It wasn't the biggest loss of the night, which was 5-4 in extra innings. Brandon Marsh abruptly leaving the game after rounding second. He put the majority of his weight on his left side, kind of hobbled back, and they confirmed it's a right hamstring injury.
Okay.
Yikes. Not good.
Nope.
Tonight, 6:40 p.m., Phillies return with Rhys Hoskins. So hopefully he gets a standing ovation.
I know is this the first series for him back? Okay.
Yes, sir.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
So we'll be watching that one. We are sponsored this morning in Kale and Company News Live by Anderson Mechanical Corporation. Just take advantage. AMC, Anderson Mechanical Corporation, Spring Tune-Up Special. Listeners, you're going to receive a 15% off your spring maintenance, and you get 1 year of free maintenance with a replacement system. Call today, amcontheweb.com, amcontheweb.com. Yes, we are heating up to 84 degrees today. There is a chance for some showers moving through quickly later on this evening. Kale and Company News Live.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. 6:14 as we get another week started with another Big Take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
The Big Take this morning brought to you by American Heritage Credit Union, Two Dying Empires, the legacy media, and our government. You know, last week we were largely focused on Donald Trump and Joe Biden, from Trump's trial in Manhattan to Joe Biden pandering to black voters last week. And it was largely spent on the courthouse drama and the campaign trail of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. But today we shine the spotlight on two of our oldest American institutions, two of which have been seen with less trust and in a worse light than they are today. It's our media and our government. And there are five stories that illustrate the erosion and decay of these two pillars of American life. From Vivek Ramaswamy purchasing a stake in BuzzFeed to lamestream media networks such as ABC, CBS, and NBC's media bias by omission of the Donald Trump trial, to the media blackout and hypocrisy of the sheer volume of coverage of two NFL kickers, to a former MSNBC host slamming his old network for the slant on the Joe Biden $320 million bridge disaster, to finally a Semaphore poll on young voters in despair over all of their politicians being frauds. These five stories will encapsulate it all. But let's start with the former GOP presidential candidate and rising Republican star, Vivek Ramaswamy. You might have missed this last week, but earlier last week, Ramaswamy disclosed that he purchased an 8.3% stake in BuzzFeed, the failing media company. And Vivek penned a letter to the board last Monday insisting that they give more prominent roles to conservatives to embrace greater diversity of thought. About that for a concept. And in doing so, he wants the website to hire an array of voices in the political spectrum, ranging from Tucker Carlson to Bill Maher to Charles Barkley to Aaron Rodgers, conservative, liberal, centrist, moderate, left-wing, right-wing, everywhere in between would be an accurate way to describe those four voices. And shares of BuzzFeed soared by around 20%. After the word got out that Vivek took an active stake in the company. Most notably, Vivek ripped BuzzFeed for its feeding of, quote, distrust of the media, including its decision in 2017 to publish the Steele dossier against Donald Trump, which we know was unproven allegations. Vivek saying, quote, distinguish yourself from competitors by openly admitting your past journalistic failures and redefine BuzzFeed's brand around the pursuit of truth. How about that? What a novel concept, the pursuit of truth. I love Vivek's spirit and his vision. I just don't know where and how, if any of that is attainable. A place where all views are shared in the political and cultural spectrum. Seems to me that many people say they want that, but quickly resort to their safe space and their respective corners at the drop of controversy or merely free speech and dissenting viewpoints. It's like hearing about a third party or an all-news, fact-based television network. We hear America wants it, yet it doesn't materialize. Second up is the absurd media bias by omission that Dawn talks about all the time when it comes to legacy networks such as ABC, CBS, and NBC pertaining to the coverage of Trump's trial last week in Manhattan with Alvin Bragg. Out of 110 evening news stories, just three of the 110 mentioned Manhattan DA's partisan leanings during the trial coverage, the study found. According to Media Research Center, MRC Newsbusters studied morning, evening, and Sunday news shows on ABC, CBS, and NBC since the start of jury selection back on April 14th. Amongst the key findings was that in the over 640 minutes of total trial coverage across three networks, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg was rarely identified as a partisan Democrat. Quote, these numbers show not only a liberal media bias, but basic journalistic ineptitude. In any story, you want to answer the basics. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. So to leave out Alvin Bragg's partisan affiliation, or that he campaigned in parts on bringing down Trump, is shoddy at best and deceptive at its worst. That is according to Newsbuster managing editor Curtis Houck, who told Fox News. Houck said the data proves that the networks simply want to hurt Trump, quote, fundamental facts be damned, and quote, no matter how overwhelmingly voluminous their coverage gets, end quote. Houck, who conducted the study alongside Newsbuster researcher Rich Noyes, found that ABC delivered the most coverage within 257 minutes, NBC came in second with 222 minutes, and CBS managed 161 minutes over 6 weeks since the trial began. And out of 110 evening news stories, only three indicated that Bragg was a Democrat. As I've been saying for a long time, these networks are merely the megaphone of the left, and they do their jobs as activists, not journalists. It's been that way for a long time, but it's been amplified tenfold during the Trump era of Republican politics. The media has an agenda. It also looks at the pyramid of victimization. And in today's woke climate, the attack against Christians, Catholics, and conservatives has never been more palpable, which leads us to story number three. A compare and contrast of two NFL kickers in the news in recent weeks. Bobby Barak of OutKick had a great breakdown of the media backlash against Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, who merely shared his personal beliefs about women, wives, and being homemakers at a Catholic commencement speech that got left-wingers hot and bothered, compared to the lack of outrage over accusations of sexual assault against Jaguars and Commanders kicker and former Temple University product here in Philadelphia, Brandon McManus. And this is something that even Dan Abrams of News Nation has noticed, and he had this to say last week. Listen and watch clip number one.
Part of our mission on this show is to highlight the hypocrisy of the partisan media outrage machine on either side. Sometimes it's overtly political, and other times it's a bit more nuanced. Like the tale of two stories playing out right now involving two kickers in the NFL, and how differently the two stories are being treated by the media. Now, remember Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, seemingly happily married conservative football player, gives a conservative speech at a conservative college encouraging women to be homemakers.
It is you, the women, who have had the most diabolical lies told to you. Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world.
Look, they're controversial comments for sure. I would not have said it, right? They're his personal views. The level of outrage, soul-searching, demands for others tangentially affiliated with him to disavow the comments continues to dominate the news cycle, with calls for him to be fired from the Chiefs, not the least because he's now doubled down, instantly making him a villain to the left and a hero to some on the right.
Pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable if you think about that. Harrison Butker has been treated like a monster because of free speech. Yet Brandon McManus, even though these are merely allegations and accusations, by the way, he was just cut by the Washington Commanders yesterday afternoon, yet it appears to be proven factually true. Actually, it's not. We'll see how it plays out in a court of law. But he's gotten off scot-free over potential actions that are abhorrent and inexcusable when it pertains to media coverage and media outrage. Harrison Butker has been treated far worse than Brandon McManus, and he did absolutely nothing wrong. Here's part two of Dan Abrams on News Nation comparing and contrasting these two stories in the media. Listen and watch.
Even the White House spokesperson took a question on Butker's speech and used it to pivot to the Biden administration's stance on the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe versus Wade. Yet meanwhile, did you even know there is another professional football player who also happens to be a kicker, who is now facing serious accusations of sexual assault? And no one seems to be all that outraged. No one's even talking about it, neither on the left nor the right. On Friday, two female flight attendants sued NFL kicker Brandon McManus accusing them of sexually assaulting them on a flight to London last September while he was with the Jacksonville Jaguars. The woman, Sam McManus, who is now signed with the Washington Commanders, attempted to kiss one of them and grinded and rubbed up against both of them while they were trying to do their work. Both McManus and the Jaguars are named as defendants. McManus denies the allegations in the lawsuit. The Jaguars said they're looking into it. But is anyone on cable even talking about this? It seems not. An analysis of recent coverage on the major cable network shows that within the 2.5 weeks since Butker gave that speech, he's been mentioned more than 7 dozen times. Would appear McManus has not been mentioned once within a week of his commencement.
And why is that? Well, I think first off, the left vilifies words more than they do actions. And secondly, the left is infatuated over culture wars and attacks against traditionalism in America. The left wants to rebrand and rewrite history. And right now, the target is on the backs of anybody right of center, more so than going after anyone who may have done something illegal and immoral to a female. But it's on brand and par for the course. Have you been paying attention to the Title IX assault from the Biden administration? How biological females are treated and compared to transgender male athletes? This should surprise nobody and infuriate everybody. And speaking of media absurdity, that gets us to our fourth and final story. Former MSNBC anchor Mehdi Hasan now trashes Joe Biden after his $320 million Gaza pier falls apart, calling it a bloody S show. Hasan said, quote, "If this happened under Trump's watch, we would all be mocking and denouncing him." Hasan goes on to say, quote, "It's super embarrassing that it happened on Biden's watch, and the fact it did shouldn't prevent us from saying so." The $320 million structure lasted roughly a week before choppy weather battered it apart. The Biden administration is saying that it's working to repair the pier, but offered no timeline for when it would be fixed. The images show that less than a third of the pier remains intact, and there is no sign of the remnants of the deeper sections of the structure. And if that doesn't summarize the Biden administration in 4 years, I don't know what does. And you wonder why today's youth generation has no faith or trust in any politician. And that's where we will end. Semaphore with the headline that reads, quote, "A dying empire led by bad people. Poll finds young voters despairing over U.S. politics." A whopping 65% agreed either strongly or somewhat that nearly all politicians are corrupt and make money from their political power, with only 7% disagreeing. Quote, "I think these statements blow me away. The scale of these numbers with young voters," said Evan Roth Smith, Blueprint's lead pollster, telling Semaphore, quote, "Young voters do not look at our politics and our media and see any good guys today. They see a dying empire led by bad people." And this shouldn't blow you away. Not our media coverage, not our government. Two dying empires, the legacy media and the government in this country. Two institutions that despise free speech, critical thinking, Donald J. Trump, conservatives, Catholics, and what once made this nation the envy of the world. And that's the big take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
And it's brought to you by American Heritage Credit Union. If you are buying a home with the My CU Home Connection program through American Heritage Credit Union, you can unlock exclusive cash rewards, benefits, and discounts. Learn more at AmericanHeritageCU.org/home connection. Insured by NCUA, not a member. Join today. NMLS 433-838. If you want to jump in, you can do so. 855-839-1210 on social media at 1210WPHD. And of course, in the YouTube chat, it's the Kale and Company comment community. Just go to youtube.com/at1210WPHD and hit the like and subscribe buttons. A lot of news to get to from the weekend with Donald Trump, and we'll do all of that as we continue. Nick, Dawn, and Sean Farish in for Greg Stocker this morning here on Kale and Company on Talk Radio 1210WPHD.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Dawn and Sean, let's get down to this. Let's get right into Trump. Very, very busy weekend for him on a multitude of fronts. And I just want to start here with the donations and the fundraising that has been made for the Trump camp from really since the day the verdict came down Thursday afternoon, shortly after 4 p.m., You know, we talked about it a ton on Friday. I've got a bunch of numbers here in front of me. I'm not even sure what the accurate total is. I had 34.8 million as of Friday, according to the Trump War Room Twitter feed. Saturday, I noticed 52 million. Sunday, I heard 70 million. Now I believe it's $200 million, although I might be wrong, but I swear I've seen that number in the last 24 hours. So, Sean, I'll start with you. Your thoughts, because I think you had the $200 million number, the crazy amount of money that is coming in right now. It seems to me, at least financially, everything that they have done to Trump has only galvanized the base even more, and maybe even some independents and Democrats throwing in money as well.
Yeah, so I tweeted that I think the $200 million number, so obviously it's 100% true. No need to fact check it.
We're good. I don't know
where I saw it. I think I saw it from somebody reliable. I try not to post, you know, nonsense on there, although sometimes it is a lot of fun because it gets the left going crazy. You know, you look at the donations, and I think you just hit it, right? A lot of it is coming from the base, which, you know, and there's a lot of people on the right in the base who say, well, I've never actually donated to a campaign before, but, you know, I've helped, I've door knocked, I've done this, I voted, I'm a Trump supporter, but now I'm actually donating, which is, that's a good first step for a lot of people. They see this verdict and they say, hey, we gotta take care of this. We gotta, you know, let's donate. Let's give this guy some more money in his war chest that he can go out and deploy during the campaign. Obviously, the base is more motivated post verdict than they were pre-verdict. The one thing we have to watch is, and I think the Trump campaign, I think it was WinRed, that whole infrastructure, the interface they have there, said that about 30% of these donors over the course of, you know, from when the verdict hit to now, have been first-time donors. Now, it doesn't mean that he's necessarily expanding the party in terms of voters, but people who haven't previously donated are now donating, which is a great sign, a healthy sign for the campaign. The one thing we have to watch is, are there people in the middle who hear the convicted felon label and say, I don't care about that? And I think right now there have been a couple of post-conviction polls with very, very slight shifts in favor of Joe Biden. And I mean slight, like maybe he leads by a point or two, which likely in the Electoral College means that Donald Trump wins the election. I want to see how that can be. Are we going to get like a Biden bump over the course of the first 2 weeks post-conviction, and then it start to fade away again? Because here's the thing. A lot of people are saying, well, this convicted felon label, it may scare some people away in the middle. And it may do that right now, but we've got five more months, actually, until the election. So people on June 3rd may be saying, yeah, I'm not voting for a convicted felon. But come closer to November 5th, where you say, well, you know, eggs just went up again. Gas isn't going down. There's another war in the Middle East. You know, all of these different factors, the border, et cetera, that are playing a role. How many of them are going to look back and say, all right, well, we can have four more years of the chaos, or I can vote for Donald Trump, who they say is a convicted felon, but he got convicted of something that really doesn't matter and didn't matter when he was president the first time around. And these things had already happened. So, you know, I think the donations, that metric is very important. It's encouraging if you support Trump. Some of the new polling hasn't shown a huge shift toward Joe Biden. We'll see if that's the beginning of a trend or the end of the quote unquote Biden bump. And we'll see what that looks like going forward. But I do think encouraging signs for the Trump campaign.
You know, Dawn, we always talk about this. Democrats are many things, but Democrats are not stupid. They're not dumb people. I mean, they're always one step ahead of the Republicans, at least when it comes to elected officials on the left. But everything they've thrown at this guy has backfired. And you always talk about getting played. We're all getting played. So something has to add up here, because they keep doing this. It's not working. Either they know something that we don't, or they're just going for the convicted felon label and hoping that carries the day for them. Because donation wise and poll wise, it's almost like Donald Trump is Teflon Don. Nothing penetrates this guy or his base.
Yeah, it would seem they've awakened the sleeping tiger, you know, that they have. There are so many different people in so many different communities. I'll say, as far as the numbers go, you know, you see all of these different numbers. I don't have the final confirmation from any particular group. RNC came out and said 70 million, but then you have different platforms that are fundraising platforms, and that would probably add up to the 200 that you're talking about. And so because you have the RNC, the GOP, they might launch, WinRed might be endorsed by the GOP, but might be an arm of it. And I think that explains that 200 if you're adding all of this up. What it shows you, these numbers are incredible. And the fact that they are from individuals who are coming out of the woodwork and saying, all right, that's it. This is way over the top. I would also say about that title of the label that Democrats want to say, oh, convicted felon. You know, I had said this last week, I think at least 80 million Americans, about a third of adults, are convicted criminals. And so be careful of that, especially with Hunter Biden going on trial today. But be careful about that, because I thought the Democrats especially were the party where we put people first. We don't want to say convicted felons. We don't want to say convicts. We don't want to say these words, right? Because you're supposed to say people who are embattled with the justice system. You know how they have that thing where people who are, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, I saw over the weekend different individuals, not necessarily celebrities, from all different communities, in particular the African American community, saying, you know what? This is something that we've long in the African American community that we've said we were unfairly targeted, or we didn't get the same kind of justice. For this to happen to a former president and a billionaire businessman, this flipped me. I'm a longtime Democrat. I thought that kind of situation should be concerning to Democrats in this upside down world we live in. So I don't know, maybe it brings forth some kind of justice and some kind of common sense, kind of like rebooting a computer to say, wow, this is so far over the top. We need to all look at this and examine this and say, we can all agree this is crazy.
I was looking at a bunch of numbers over the weekend, forgetting about donations for a moment and fundraising, but looking at the polls. Emerson College poll with The Hill and PIX 11, which I think is a channel in New York. Have Donald Trump. Yeah, his lead, Biden's lead in New York after the conviction is 7 points. Joe's now only leading Trump 48% to 41% in a head-to-head matchup. So that has helped Trump in a state that many think he can't win but could be competitive in. And then I've got this one here. This is from Axios, and this was the morning consult poll conducted on Friday, one of the first polls after the Trump conviction, where 49% of independents think that Trump should drop out of the race post-guilty verdict, which is not going to happen. 54% of registered voters strongly or somewhat approve of the guilty verdict, compared to 34% who strongly or somewhat disapprove. 49% of independents and 15% of Republicans said Trump should end his campaign because of his conviction. And the polls found that the race effectively tied nationally in a one-on-one, with Biden at 44% and Trump at 45%. He's not going anywhere. We know that. In fact, he said, I think over the weekend on Fox and Friends in an exclusive first interview since his conviction, that he'd be happy to go to jail over this. And he's not going to beg and plead and cry not to go to jail. And then there's stories out there with the legal experts and guys that are sentencing experts saying Trump could end up with merely community service, which would include trash pickup and graffiti cleanup. Like, you want to talk about doing something just to embarrass somebody? Forget convicted felon for a moment, Sean. The Democrats would love nothing more than to see Trump scrubbing graffiti in New York like a little 16-year-old on like a ARD program where, you know, you're going to do your little time, you're going to do your little probation, and then they expunge your record and hopefully you learn your lesson. That's what they're trying to do here to Trump. They're trying to humble him, embarrass him, and make him look like the common man, not the GOP presumptive nominee.
He'll own it, won't he?
He would, too.
Yeah, oh, he'll definitely own it. Nobody scrubs graffiti. Nobody scrubs it better. I'll tell you that. We're doing so well. We're scrubbing. You know, we're like Mr. Miyagi, wax on, wax off. We're getting all of the graffiti off. It's all coming off. Look at that. There was graffiti And I know who drew that. I taught him how to do that. I taught him how to make the graffiti. I said, this is how you do it. And then we got it off. It's great. I think the embarrassment is all they're going for. But please don't underestimate the left. They're drooling. They are, you know, like, I don't want to be inappropriate, so we're not going to go there. But, like, over the fact of Trump in jail, they're very, let's say, excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is Mershon with the daughter. We know how conflicted. Alvin Bragg, Soros back DA. Apparently, there's a rumor that he's looking to recommend a year in jail for Donald Trump at the sentencing hearing when Mershon hands down the sentence, which immediately is going to be appealed and suspended and stayed until the appeals process is over. So he's probably not going to have to do any of it, the graffiti or the jail time or anything. But humiliation, I think, is part of it. And that's why Stormy Daniels took the stand and talked about all sorts of crazy stuff that wasn't relevant to the case. So but don't underestimate the left. They want him in jail. I know they want him in jail. They don't care that they're overplaying his hand. I know that they want him in jail. They've been talking about it. Just listen to him. Trump's going to prison. You see the memes of him in an orange jumpsuit. It's just like it's completely and totally ridiculous. And to Dawn's point earlier, this is the party, right, that was like, let's empty the jails and let felons vote. But they're like, Donald Trump's a felon. He can't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we're in rules are for thee, not for me again territory, or it's okay when we do it, but not when you do it. So you mentioned the 49% of independents think it's Trump should drop out. This is what I'm talking about, right? This is like the temporary equalizer. It's kind of like the bump after the State of the Union. I don't believe this is going to, I don't think 49% of independents are going to want him out of the race in a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. So we'll have to see if this is the beginning of a trend or if this is just a short-term shift and then things kind of reset, go back to normal. That's what I think is going to happen with the polling. I think people are going to react now. It's fresh. The wound cuts a little deeper, but it's going to heal. It's going to scar over. It's going to be fine. And then in a couple months, people are going to forget about it because it's not going to be relevant. They want a better life. They want the life they had 5 years ago. And that's why they're going to wind up voting Trump.
855-839-1210. If you want to jump in, we'll come back, wrap up the 6 o'clock hour. Dawn's got some news. The kickoff hour number two. We'll also let you know about Trump and his debut on TikTok, as well as the reaction for Trump in New Jersey on Saturday night for UFC 302. And we'll do that when we come back. It's Kale and Company live here on this Monday morning on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. But first, let me tell you about my friends at the Piazza Auto Group. Recently stopped out and stopped by the Piazza Acura of Westchester location. This was just about 8 weeks ago, and I drove the Road and Track Performance Car of the Year. It's the 2024 Acura Integra. I was an Acura owner for 10 years. I had the little four-cylinder ILX. It was great on gas, but the Integra, by far the most striking Acura I have seen. Well-equipped with advanced safety and tech features like wireless Apple CarPlay, high-performance adaptive damper system technology, and Wi-Fi hotspot capability with a 16-speaker premium audio system. This is a beautiful vehicle. If you want something a little bit above a Mazda, but you can't afford the Mercedes-Benz, the Acura Integra is right in that sweet spot. Visit PiazzaAcura.com or test drive the new Integra at Piazza Acura in Westchester, Ardmore, or Reading, and tell them Nick sent you.
Start your day with Kale and Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.